From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Yvonne Crumry. State health officials say another 41 Juneau residents and visitors tested positive for COVID-19 on Wednesday and Thursday. That does not include results from rapid home tests. Another 14 people tested positive and were contagious while in schools, according to the school district. There are 4 people currently being treated for COVID-19 at Bartlett Regional Hospital. City officials say 8 people who work at the hospital are out because of exposure to the virus. Juneau's incident commander, Robert Barr, says the state is sending a load of KN95 masks, which the city should have available for residents next week. Statewide, another 1,150 new people have tested positive for COVID-19 on Wednesday and Thursday. According to state data, just over 64% of Alaskans age 5 and older have gotten their first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. In Juneau, the vaccination rate is hovering at about 80%. Anyone in Juneau can get a vaccine by calling 907-586-600 or registering online at juneau.org/vaccine. Professor Ian Hartman is expanding his 2020 book on Alaska's Black history. Black Lives in Alaska, A History of African Americans in the Far Northwest, is due to come out this fall. His work delves into the history of segregation in Alaska. Ian Hartman wants Alaska's history to include everyone who made an impact on the state, not just white people. Stories of housing discrimination in the 20th century are often set in the lower 48, but Alaska has its own legacy of racial segregation. In his book, Black History in the Last Frontier, Ian Hartman outlines how racial segregation looked in Alaska compared to the rest of the country. For example, housing covenants in Anchorage and Juneau prohibited the sale of houses to anyone who wasn't white. In some instances, they were specifically written to exclude Black Alaskans and Alaska Native buyers. And in some areas, these historic boundaries impacted the ways that neighborhoods look today.
In Juneau, again, with the largest minority population being Alaska Natives, you'd probably find very explicit reference forbidding the sale of a home to anyone who is not of, quote, Caucasian extraction or whites only or able to sell or whatever the case would be. And then there would be these exclusionary clauses that would encapsulate the various minority populations.
Hartman is a history professor at the University of Alaska. He said it took him some practice knowing what to look for while he was looking through historical documents because the racial language is often extremely outdated.
You have to kind of train your eye to read these documents, but entire neighborhoods in Anchorage really bear the imprint of racially exclusive buying.
In 1948, the Supreme Court ruled that racial covenants like these were unconstitutional. That opened the door for Black families to move in. Hartman's book details that in Anchorage, white supremacists burned down the homes of those pioneering Black families. These fires and pushback from activists led to the NAACP opening its first branch in Alaska in 1951. The November 1969 issue of Ebony Magazine also printed an article about Alaska's prospects open to Black Americans who were willing to work hard. However, the magazine also acknowledged that Black men were excluded from the fishing industry in Ketchikan, and Black Americans and Alaska Natives had talked about encountering housing segregation in Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. Hartman's book also details instances where Black Alaskans faced further discrimination and racial hostility in the 1970s and 80s, as more and more white people moved to Alaska from the South and brought white supremacist views with them.
But I do think that it is perhaps cultural. I think that there's a belief among Alaskans, right? The famous line, we don't care how they do it outside, or, you know, we're going to do it our own way. And that can have quite a costly impact on communities of color who may be steamrolled by the process, particularly again, kind of the Cold War era when Alaska really boomed in terms of its population. Then, of course, again, with the establishment of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and the oil boom in the 70s.
But the 1970s were also the time when Alaskans elected their first Black politicians. The first Black state representative pushed for a committee to develop a survey on discrimination in Alaska. The group focused on South Central. Hartman details that final report, which showed high levels of housing segregation. It concluded that white residents had deliberately locked minorities out of the housing market and pushed them onto the least desirable land. He says he wrote the book after years of reading the same stories of the history of Alaska, which left out whole communities of people. And he says that while there is a historical era of racial tension that has to be confronted,
I think we have to be realistic about where we're at. And, you know, if you were to look at life expectancy, access to healthcare, access to quality education, generational transfers of wealth, things like that. I mean, you know, Alaska still does bear the imprint of the historical legacy of racism and racial inequality.
Hartman says he wants people who read his book to see the value in the state's diversity. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cormery. The newly expanded version of Ian Hartman's book is set to be released this fall. The current version, Black History in the Last Frontier, can be found linked in this article at ktoo.org. Ketchikan School Board will review the district's investigation into allegations of racism in the stands at a high school basketball game against the Metlakatla Chiefs. That's according to an interim superintendent, Melissa Johnson. She says the school district recently completed its investigation into the February 5th basketball game against the Metlakatla High School on the state's only Native reservation. A probe was launched following complaints of Ketchikan's pep club members dressed in Western wear, and fans of antagonizing their longtime rivals by stereotyping themselves as cowboys and their opponents as Indians. The pep club apologized last week. In an interview, senior pep club member Colin Hudoff said the club meant no harm and regretted the pain the incident had caused.
We are sorry for what's happened, and if we could go back and change the country theme and anything that happened that was any sort of offensive or known as racism, then we would.
Some in the audience alleged they'd heard stereotypical war cries during the game. Hudoff says he didn't hear anything of that nature. But the pep club has acknowledged the barking during free throws. Senior pep club member Dylan Nedzwecki said it's something they do to distract the opposing players. He said it had nothing to do with the Western theme or their opponents.
We've done it the whole season. No, like, malicious intent. It's just a noise we can all do that we know how to do to try to throw off the other team.
Johnson's tells KRDBD in an email that she will brief the school board on February 23rd behind closed doors on the district's probe of the incident. Johnson said personnel and disciplinary matters are confidential. It's unclear whether any findings of the district's investigation would be made public. Johnson declined to immediately answer questions. The controversy has opened a conversation about racism in the wider community. Tribal leaders in Ketchikan, Juneau, and Metlakatla have denounced the Ketchikan High School fans' antics. Governor Mike Dunleavy said it's proper for the state government to pay to settle a lawsuit after a judge found state workers were entitled to damages for actions Dunleavy took in his personal capacity. Federal District Court Judge John Sedgwick ruled in October that Dunleavy and his former chief of staff, Tuckerman Babcock, violated the First Amendment rights of two Alaska Psychiatric Institute doctors by requiring them to sign what they deemed a loyalty pledge. The legislature must now decide whether to fund a settlement payment of nearly $500,000 in the state budget. Former Attorney General Jonna Lindemuth recently wrote an opinion article in the Anchorage Daily News saying that the settlement is both illegal and unethical. She says it violated a provision of the state constitution that says state money can only be spent for a specific purpose. She said it violated the State Executive Branch Ethics Act. Dunleavy responded yesterday. He said the settlement was both legal and constitutional.
We believe that if ordinary citizens that happen to want to run for office are then subject to certain court actions in their capacity of what they are, whether it's governor, legislator, school board official, we think it makes it very difficult for folks to be able to execute their job the right way.
Lindemuth wrote that the legislature should not fund both the settlement and the legal fees for defending Dunleavy and Babcock in their personal capacities. She wrote that if the legislature does fund them, the issue could be taken to court. A regional drug task force investigation found illegal drugs and cash in Wrangell on Tuesday, but it hasn't yet led to any arrests. Members of the Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs Task Force conducted an investigation into importation and distribution of methamphetamine in Wrangell on Tuesday and found 24 grams of meth and $11,440 in cash, according to a press release from the Wrangell Police Department. The task force, which includes Southeast Police Departments, as well as state and federal law enforcement agencies, served search warrants on three residences in Wrangell, but hasn't made any arrests or named suspects in the case. Wrangell's Police Chief Tom Radke declined to comment on Thursday, citing an open investigation. This is KTOO. For stories like these and other local news, please visit our website at ktoo.org. I'm Yvonne Krumrie.